But Moses went up the mountain to get the Ten Commandments. And Moses knew what was happening. But the people that he'd brought out of Egypt, probably about 3 months ago, and who'd walked all the way to the bottom of the mountain, and who had grumbled all the way. I would like to hear some grumbling, please. They'd grumbled all the way. And Moses had had to keep telling them, it's okay, it's okay. But still, they kept on grumbling. Some of them would say there's no food, and some of them would say there's no water. And Moses would pray to God, and all would be okay. But still, they kept on. So Moses had gone up the mountain, and he'd been there for quite a while. He and God had been having quite a discussion. God had been giving all sorts of instructions about the sort of tent they should have to worship God in. Even told them what sort of curtains they should have. All very intense. But meanwhile, down the bottom of the mountain, what do you think the people were doing? They were grumbling. Grumbling and grumbling and grumbling. Let's see if I can find my bit of paper. Oh, gosh. Yes, grumble, grumble. Keep grumbling. So, that's what they did. They just didn't know what was going to happen. So, while Moses was away, Aaron was the leader. And everyone came to Aaron to complain. Do something for us. We're sick of waiting for Moses. He brought us out of Egypt, but we don't know what he's doing now. He seems to have gone and left us. So, someone had an idea. Why don't you make gods to lead us? Because Moses isn't here. Aaron was getting tired of all the grumbling. So Aaron said, well, take off all your gold rings, the gold rings in your ears and the gold rings that you wear, and bring them to me. So they did. They brought all the gold to Aaron, and he made an image of a calf from the gold, an idol. And he showed it to the people and said, here are your gods who brought you out of Egypt. And he listened for the grumbling. No, there wasn't any. Don't you think that's a bit strange? Had the gods brought them out of Egypt? No. Who brought them out of Egypt? Moses. And God had brought them out of Egypt. But no, they wanted this other one. He built a place to worship the gold calf and decided the next day would be a special festival. Was there any grumbling? No. He built, and so the people got up next day and they worshipped the idols as other people that they had seen used to do in those days by bringing burnt offerings and sacrificing animals, and they had a great feast and celebrating. And you couldn't hear grumbling but cheering. Yay! They had a great feast. Gee, your parties must be pretty poor. I want a good party here. More cheering. So, up on the mountain, God was still talking to Moses. And God was getting a bit cross. The people thought that God didn't matter to them, and what they did didn't matter to God, but it did. God said to Moses, go down at once. Your people have done something bad. They've stopped trusting in me. And they've made a golden calf and are worshipping and praying to it. I'm very angry. And in the story it says, angry enough to send fire down to burn them. Very hot fire. I wonder if God really said that. Or I wonder if that's the way people thought, that if you didn't do the right thing, God would punish you. I don't know. But that's what the story says. And the story also says that Moses argued with God and said, no, 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 no. Don't do that. Don't do that. If you do that, all the people in Egypt will laugh at you. They will think that your people aren't your special people. And anyway, that isn't how you promised to treat your people. That's not what you said to our ancestors, Abraham and Jacob. You said you would always lead us. You would always be faithful to us. And the story says that God said, okay, but hurry down and tell them to stop praying to the calf. That's not going to help them. So Moses did hurry down, and the people did stop praying to the calf. God remembered the promise that he'd made to the people, and they remembered their promise to always try and live God's way and only worship God. They learnt that what they did mattered to God. So, what do you think of that story? I wonder how you'd feel if you would left everything that you knew behind and gone out into the middle of the desert and the person who led you suddenly disappeared for a while. You'd feel a bit angry. You'd want something else to happen. I think that's how the people felt.
The first reading comes to us today from Philippians chapter 4, verses 1 to 9. Therefore, my brothers and sisters, whom I love and long for, my joy and crown, stand firm in the Lord in this way, my beloved. I urge Euodia and I urge Syncope to be of the same mind in the Lord. Yes, and I ask you also, my loyal companion, help these women, for they have struggled beside me in the work of the gospel, together with Clement and the rest of my co-workers, whose names are in the book of life. Rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I say rejoice. Let your gentleness be known to everyone. The Lord is near. Do not worry about anything, but in everything, by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. And the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. Finally, beloved, whatever is true, whatever is honourable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is pleasing, whatever is commendable, if there is any excellence, and if there is anything worthy of praise, think about these things. Keep on doing the things that you have learned and received and heard and seen in me, and the God of peace will be with you. These are the words of the Lord.
Today is my youngest daughter's 26th birthday, which she is celebrating in Melbourne with friends she made while travelling in the United States earlier this year. And like many mothers, I can be inclined to get somewhat nostalgic and sentimental on my children's birthday, looking back over the years. I'm also very thankful as I look back on where we were 6 years ago when she turned 20. Then Nikki was sinking deeper into depression, and it was becoming more and more obvious that she was not going to be able to complete the semester. I'm so very thankful that she is now so much better and well on her way to finishing her first year of her uni course. And that band of fear that was around my heart is loosening as much as it ever can. So many of you have offered your support and prayers over this time, and I am very thankful for this community who have supported me so well during some very difficult times. I always look back on her first day of school, which was actually on the day of her 5th birthday, a day she had long looked forward to. She had a bit of an asthma attack on her. She had frequent asthma attacks, little ones. She had asthma in the morning when she went to school. And she was only going to be there a couple of hours, and she was so determined to go, so she went. But I must say, she greeted me as she came out the classroom door by throwing up at my feet, which was what often happened after she'd been coughing a lot. That first term at school was really, really keen about going to school. Stayed around for a while, but eventually her positive attitude to school seemed to evaporate. "I don't want to go to school," would be the daily chorus, day after day. I checked that nothing specific was happening, of course, to make her unhappy. It wasn't. And day after day, and then, you know, into the second year, it kept happening. And I'd try all sorts of reasoning, as you do, about why she needed to go and what she would enjoy, because actually she always seemed to have great fun when she actually got to school. She didn't want to go. Finally, one day, I just accepted it. I accepted that she didn't want to go. It was still my role as her mother to ensure she did. Going to school was non-negotiable, but I accepted she didn't want to go. And the daily chorus came, "I don't want to go to school." "That's all right," I said. "You don't have to want to. You just have to go." And it worked. She would still say it most days, but all I would say is, "You don't have to want to, you just have to go," and it would be fine. And we still occasionally have that daily exchange when she was working as the director of the out-of-school hours care at North Adelaide. She would say to me, with that look on her face, "I don't want to go to school, Mum." And I would say, "That's okay. You don't have to want to, you just have to go." Sometimes being a parent means not doing what our children want to do, not allowing them to do what they want to do exactly when they want. Sometimes it's about making sure they do what they need to do. It's our responsibility to choose what's in their long-term interest. The Israelites had reached Mount Sinai 3 months after leaving Egypt. Somehow Moses had been persuaded to lead this group, persuaded to put their long-term interests in his heart, to take responsibility for these people. He was called to see it as an essential part of who he was, called to see that God is on the side of the oppressed, called to see that God is about freedom and life. Moses led them as they fled to the shore of the sea, where the Egyptians pursued them and the people complained, and God called them forward into life and freedom, and they celebrated how God had rescued them. They were hungry and the people complained, and God provided food and the people were satisfied. They were thirsty and the people complained, and God showed them where to find water and they drank. They wanted to go back. "We don't want to be in the desert," they said. And Moses told them, "You don't have to want to. We just have to go." He kept leading them to where their future was. Then they reached Sinai, and they realised it. They recognised it as a holy place where they cannot fail to recognise the presence of God. They are given the law, starting with the Ten Commandments. "I am the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself an idol and bow down to them." There are other rules, of course, other commandments. Commandments that make for a full life, a close relationship with God and a healthy community. Don't take God's name in vain. Keep the Sabbath. Honour your parents. Don't murder. Don't commit adultery. Don't steal. Don't lie. Don't get hung up about what others own. And then a lot of other laws follow. The promise, again, of a land to call home. And there is a fair bit of climbing the mountain and coming down for Moses. Sometimes Moses on his own, sometimes Moses with others. It seems really that there's a whole lot of stories from different traditions gathered together here. Lots of traditions gathered together in communal memory. Finally, though, Moses is called up to receive the tablets of the law. And he disappears for 40 days and nights. Meanwhile, back at the base of the mountain, the Israelites are getting somewhat restless. This Moses, they say, okay, sure, he led us out of Egypt. Yeah, he helped to show us how God is with us. He helped us cross the sea, escape from Pharaoh's troops. Yes, he helped us find food when we were hungry and found us water when we were thirsty. Well, yes, let's give him all that, but where the heck is he now? Let's have someone else to lead us. Something we can see and touch. This is the place for Aaron to remind the people of God's goodness, God's promise, God's presence. This is the time for Aaron to help them recall the law that helps people know what is life-giving. This is a chance for Aaron to take responsibility, to show leadership. And he fluffs it completely. He chooses what is popular with the people, what they want, instead of what is right for them. There is often conflict between what is comfortable and easy and profitable in the short term and doing what is right, most likely to lead us into fullness of life. It's true in our personal lives and it's true in our life together as community. Now, good leaders listen, of course, to what people say, for the wisdom of God is found in many places and often glimpsed from different perspectives. But good leaders are also leaders because they are set aside to spend time discerning God's call, what is most likely to lead to God's future of life for all people. We set aside leaders not to exercise power over us, but to spend the time looking at the big picture, spend the time seeking to understand the wider issues, to do the research, to spend time in prayer. Good leaders, godly leaders, are not primarily guided by what people most want, what brings most popularity. Good leaders are guided by what people most need, what will enable people to fulfil their calling as God's people. And people who are looking for good leadership don't ask their leaders, well, hey, what are you going to do for us? But rather, they hold them accountable through questions such as, what are you going to do as a leader to make the world a better place through us? What are you going to do to empower us to be the faithful community of God's people in this place? Aaron chose to respond to the first question, what are you going to do for us? And he allowed the people to put their trust in things that were not trustworthy. He failed to remind them of who they were, God's people on the way to receive God's promises, to be blessed so they can be a blessing to others. While Aaron has been taking the popular easy way, Moses has been doing the hard work of being a leader, being prepared to struggle with that understanding of God, to struggle with God for the people he leads, not just excusing them for what they have done, but being prepared to enter into holy ground to grapple with where things have gone wrong, to return to those who have done wrong and help them recognise that and find a way forward. So why am I telling you this, you may ask? I'm not a leader. What's this to me? Well, first, as members of this community, we all need to remember the right questions of accountability to ask those who lead, and not only in our church. We need to find ways of asking that of our leaders overall. Not what are you going to do for us, but what are you going to do to help us ensure a better future for all people? But besides besides that, I know that many of you are leaders in many places. Perhaps that's not the way you think of yourself, but many of you are. Some are leaders in this congregation. Some of you are leaders at work. Being a teacher is about leading. Some of you are leaders in community groups. I understand that there was a special occasion held for you recently, Bruce, about you becoming a leader in a community group. Some of us are leaders as parents, and sometimes in other relationships. Sometimes we have to make decisions based not on what people want, but on what is good for them, for what they need. Because they're unable to make those decisions themselves. And this is the purpose of leadership in the church, to empower everyone to step up and lead where they are, to be part of God's work in this world, and to be part of God's good news. And sometimes life is just about doing those things we don't want to, but we just have to. We mightn't want to see someone we love like that, but we have to sit by their bed because that's what love does. We don't want to face the pain that we're feeling. It would be so much easier to dull it with alcohol or work, but we have to face it. Sometimes we don't want to leave our daughter in hospital as she begs us not to leave her there. But we have to, because we know that is how she will be cured. Sometimes life is about doing the things we don't want to, because we know we have to do them if we are to know full life. The reading from Philippians that Rob read to us reminds us of those things that can sustain us as we seek to do this, as we work towards commonality of purpose with those who share with us in the work of leading, as we share with others in the work of being the community of the people of God. We seek to bless one another by offering our support to each other in ministry, in their role, whatever it is. And we are encouraged to rejoice, to concentrate on the good things we know, that God is with us, God is for us, God's way is the way of peace and wholeness. And this isn't a don't worry, be happy type of thing, always look on the bright side of life. It's about realising that not everything is our responsibility, and sharing that responsibility when we can, and taking on that responsibility with cheerfulness when we take it. And it's also about not taking ourselves too seriously. Paul's exhortation to rejoice, rejoice always, is a claim that the truth of God's love, God's preference for life, is true, even when life seems tough. When Moses has been up on the mountain too long and we feel left without direction. When we are called to do those things we don't want to do. It's a way of orientating ourselves when we're called to make hard decisions for ourselves and for others in those things that really matter. We're called to remember those things that are true and pure and pleasing and lead to excellence. To do so for ourselves and others, together in community. For these are the things that allow us to recognise how the God of peace is with us in all our life, and how to best move forward into a future that is in the best interest of all of God's creation. Together, we seek the wisdom of God as we find a future that leads us to life.